Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Churches of Christ and other conservative religious groups which oppose beverage alcohol are often characterized by the press and by the drinking public as uneducated, ignorant, obscurantist, or worse. Liberal theologians pretend to walk on higher ground than fundamentalists and evangelicals. Tragically, many religious liberals occupy the same ground and engage in the same behavior as Paul Tillich, the transplanted German theologian. Tillich's wife, Hannah, wrote about Paul Tillich's immorality in a book with the title, From Time to Time. Hannah Tillich, a lesbian by her own admission, page 51, described Dr. Tillich as being lascivious, page 103, of being rather high, page 172, of having an inclination to pornography, page 189, and of being a heavy drinker, page 214. She accused Dr. Tillich of always protecting the other woman, never his wife, page 240. Yet in spite of Tillich's indiscretions and inanities, Hannah Tillich says her famous husband was an eternally suffering Christian saint, page 24. It makes one wonder what a man would have to do to be a sinner. Paul Tillich did not represent all liberal denominational preachers in our nation. Many of them have strong convictions against the use of beverage alcohol, just as strong as you would discover among preachers in the churches of Christ. I want to give you some examples today from the book, The Christian Case for Abstinence, published by Association Press in New York in 1955. The 20 preachers who wrote chapters for this excellent book were from the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Christian Church, the Church of God, the Baptist Church, the Evangelical Free Church, the Church of the Brethren, Evangelical United Brethren Church, and the Quakers. Obviously, I cannot read long excerpts from some of these sermons, but I want to choose some statements for our learning. Before I read from the sermons in this book, I want to read a brief excerpt from the introduction written by Dr. Andrew Ivey, professor of physiology and head of the Department of Clinical Science at the University of Illinois in Chicago. Dr. Ivey holds both a Ph.D. and an M.D. and several honorary doctorates. He is almost unquestionably one of the greatest authorities in the world on the effects of beverage alcohol on the human brain and body. Please listen to Dr. Andrew Ivey. The use of alcoholic beverages and the consequent evils have been great in a nation, community, or family only when Christians and churches, most unfortunately, have exerted very little influence on the conduct of church members and on the community. After all, who is really the cause of the evil consequences of alcohol? Is it the millions of heavy and addicted drinkers and chronic alcoholics? No. These miserable victims are the worst advertisement possible. Is it the millions of adult abstainers? Obviously, no. Then who would be the cause? It must surely be the millions of occasional and moderate drinkers who promote the use of such beverages and support their manufacture and sale. And a half of these, at least, are church members. Dr. Ivey insists that the sermons in the book have scientific and physiological validity. On page 8 of the introduction, please remember that the book from which I am reading was written in 1955. Subsequent medical research has confirmed and strengthened the arguments made in this book. Everett W. Palmer of the First Methodist Church in Glendale, California, submitted a sermon for the book with the title, Lift Up a Standard. Palmer mentions the effectiveness of advertising in popularizing beverage alcohol. That advertising gets results is everywhere evident. Consumption of alcoholic beverages has risen year after year. Till now, the annual per capita consumption is 20 gallons, for which the American people spend nearly $10 billion, approximately six times more than is spent for churches, nearly two times as much as expenditures for public school education. And whereas church people as a group once presented a united front against drinking, in recent years, especially since the last World War, many are now giving way. Page 3. Edward Palmer gives the following facts concerning beverage alcohol. First, moderation is the first step to immoderation. This is true on two accounts. It is so because alcohol is a habit-forming narcotic. Every moderate, regular drinker was once just a casual drinker. Every heavy and immoderate drinker was once a moderate drinker. Every alcoholic was once just a heavy drinker who thought he could take it or leave it. Moderation is the first step to immoderation, because the first effect of alcohol is to diminish our ability to say no. So the first drink tends to lead to the second, and the second makes it harder to say no to the third. Moderation thus tends to induce immoderation. Pages 5 and 6. Third, the moderate drinker is the best friend to the liquor industry. He is the fellow who makes their advertisements appear to be telling the truth. Always, it is the man of distinction, drinking in moderation, which appears to make drinking acceptable, even desirable. There is only one question. Does the use of alcoholic beverage create evil? That is to say, does it jeopardize home and family life? Does it deny children a fair chance at life? Does it cause the innocent to suffer? Does it injure personality? Does it sabotage human values? Pages 7 and 8. Who said all of this about beverage alcohol? Not a preacher among churches of Christ. Everett W. Palmer of the First Methodist Church in Glendale, California. Is he wrong about these matters? Do preachers of our day have the same courage as did Everett Palmer? Glenn Peters preaches for the First Presbyterian Church in Visalia, California. He wrote a chapter for the book I am reviewing on where God commands intemperance. Statements from Glenn Peters' article should challenge all thinking Americans. Also, it is a known fact that where alcohol runs high, sex morals, standards of conduct run low. Alcoholism and prostitution are first cousins. Paul could not have been more accurate when he spoke of wine, wherein is excess, abandonment, dissoluteness. This intemperance God forbids. Be not drunk with wine. Do not feed the flame of your fleshly carnal nature. Pages 11 and 12. Glenn Peters asks, is there no answer to this immoderate thirst? He quotes these words from Jesus Christ. He who comes to me shall never hunger, but he who believes on me shall never thirst. And again, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He who believes on me, as the Scripture has said, out of his heart shall flow rivers of living water. Page 15. Is Glenn Peters wrong about his assessment of alcohol? Why are modern preachers afraid to attack this great evil? How can churches allow beverage alcohol to be legalized and to be promoted so widely in our communities? Asbury Lennox of the Forest Park Methodist Church in Lufkin, Texas, wrote an excellent article, What'll You Have? Lennox writes, What'll You Have? The newspaper screaming a reply. 7 killed in bus accident, October 30th in Oakland, California. Reason was that one man was driving while intoxicated. Drunken driver passes car on hill, kills mother of 3 as family enjoys Sunday drive. Barbara and Jesse, walking home from a movie date, were run over and killed by a 20-year-old boy who said he had a couple, maybe 3 bottles of beer. Page 19. Linux tells of a government commission in the state of Massachusetts, which had the responsibility of investigating the problem of alcohol in that state. The commission discovered that for every $1 revenue income from the sale of alcohol, let me repeat that, $1 in revenue from the sale of alcohol, the taxpayers paid $4.82 to take care of known liquor costs, court costs, jail costs, hospitalization, and welfare work. Page 20. What a wonderful way for a state to handle its financial problems. Sheldon Church preaches for the Waccamas Christian Church in Waccamas, Oklahoma. He asked the American people to remove the masks relating to alcohol. He insists that moderation is drinking is like being a little bit pregnant. Page 26. According to Schertz, the liquor industry says some people should not drink. These are the people who should not drink, according to Schertz. They who might become drunkards should not drink. They who might, by moderate drinking, encourage youth to believe that they can drink moderately too, should not drink. They who, if they drink, take good things from the family should not drink. They who are made less efficient, able, or desirable as workers by drinking should not drink. They who drive automobiles should not drink. They who hold positions of trust should not drink. They who care for the blessings and happiness of family life should not drink. They who hold good and their bodies and minds as trust from God should not drink. They who must someday give an account to God for life and all it has been and might have been should not drink. They who have a desire for heaven should not drink. Others, of course, can safely drink. Page 31. Daniel D. Walker preaches for the First Methodist Church in Corvallis, Oregon. Daniel Walker quotes these challenging words from Bob Moon. If by scientific, objective study, we discovered that drinking alcohol was a wholesome way to develop an attractive personality, that it made all workers more reliable and more efficient, that it lessened crime and promoted good citizenship, that it reduced accidents and disease, and in general improved our health, if, all these things considered, alcohol belonged on the asset side of our social balance sheet, then each of us would be honor-bound to encourage everybody to form the drink habit. But if we found the opposite to be true and concluded that alcohol was a liability, then it is fair to say that we would be honor-bound to bend every effort to discourage its use. Dear friends, the evidence by any scientific study places the use of alcoholic beverages on the liability side. It causes from 25 to 40% of our auto accidents. Every 3rd traffic death is due to alcohol. Many thousands of people are wounded and killed every year by drinking drivers. It causes many of our industrial accidents. It has been estimated that 400 million man-hours of work are lost every year by alcoholics alone. It has a part in many of our crimes. A large part of police time and effort is taken up with dealing with alcoholic problems. It is one of the principal causes of poverty and divorce. It causes one of the major health problems in our nation. And it cannot be defended as a developer of personality. It's on the liability side, all right. As the superintendent of schools in one of our cities said the other day, alcoholism is a more serious threat to America than communism. Page 47. Remember, these words were written in 1955. How many preachers do you know who will stand in pulpits across this land and give these indisputable facts regarding drinking? Have they sold out to the liquor industry and to the devil? Kenneth Prunty of the Church of God in Smith Center, Kansas, wrote a chapter with the title, The Right to Belong. Please listen to some of Kenneth Prunty's words. The home is an important institution on the domestic scene here in America. Has beverage alcohol contributed to the happiness and effectiveness of the home? Apparently not, for court authorities in Los Angeles County say that in at least two of every three marriages that fail, the use of liquor is a major cause. 89% of the divorces in Boston are caused by alcohol, says Judge Zatali, judge of the Boston Municipal Court. Page 54. The sneak bombing of Pearl Harbor was one of the most dastardly deeds ever perpetrated by wicked men. But the Japanese knew the American soldiers and sailors would be drunk and unable to fend off the attack. Who said so? Captain Mitsuo Fuchida, former officer in the Japanese Navy, who led the attack on Pearl Harbor, gave this account. I think the American sailors do as the Japanese sailors do on Saturday night, get drunk. The attack was planned to take advantage of that. In fact, on Saturday and Saturday night before the attack, we aviators listening to the Honolulu radio felt sure that there would be very much drinking among American seamen and soldiers. Among us Japanese naval officers, we had had experience with drink. But during days before and after Pearl Harbor, the Japanese did give up drink. We depended on the American Navy's being caught wet. Hart McAfee of Listen magazine wrote of the Pearl Harbor incident, I was shaken and disheartened to observe drunken men trying to shake off hangovers and stumble back to their battle stations after the fury of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Page 55. My preacher friend, do you have the courage to stand before your congregation next Sunday and tell them about the tragedy of Pearl Harbor? Alcohol destroyed thousands of lives on Pearl Harbor. I have stood on the monument in Pearl Harbor, which rises above the USS Arizona, where almost 1,500 men lie to this day. And you still can defend alcohol for any reason? Frank Johnson is affiliated with Marvin Chapel of Hillsboro, West Virginia. I have no idea about his denominational background. Marvin Chapel might be an independent church. His article has a rather unusual but appropriate title, The Report of Demon Drink to His Majesty, the Archfiend of the Bottomless Pit. Johnson quotes a supervising social worker in an institution providing care for unmarried mothers as saying, more than half the girls were there as a result of indiscreet behavior during their first experience with intoxication. The United States Department of Commerce reports that in 1948, alcoholics constituted 16% of all first admissions to mental hospitals. Page 78. William McLeister II works with the Beverly Heights United Presbyterian Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His article is simply entitled, To Drink or Not to Drink. McLeister quotes these words from Robert Moon, District Secretary of the Washington Briefing Conference. Suppose that there are 150 million cows in America. Suppose a thriving industry is producing old scarecrow hay by aging it in the cornfield and offering it to the farmers. Suppose this old scarecrow hay makes cows do strange things, like running into barbed wire fences, jumping off bridges, and cutting down in milk production 50 million cow days a year. Suppose this old scarecrow hay is advertised on billboards in every pasture and is sold as hay for cows of distinction, the hay that belongs and the hay that makes social life more congenial. Suppose for every addict of the old scarecrow hay cured, 10 new addicts spring up in the barn. It would not be long until farmers of America would say, "Brothers, that ain't hay," and would banish it from the pasture. William McAllister asks, if cows are of such value, are not human beings of infinitely greater value than animals? We have a great responsibility as Christians in this area of alcohol and its use. Page 85. Do you believe your preacher and the church you attend have any responsibility in the area of alcohol and its use? Ernest J. Vick of the Evangelical Free Church in New Folden, Minnesota, wrote an article on Mind the First Step. Vick makes five very valuable observations. First, I am interested in the first step because the first step determines direction. No man or woman will ever become a drunkard who does not take the first drink. Page 95. Second, I would say the first step is the step that leads to slavery. Page 96. Third, the first step may lead to the commitment of other sins. Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. Hosea 4:11. Page 98. Fourth, the first step leads to an indulgence which is costly and which leads to poverty. Page 99. Fifth and finally, I will say that the first step may be the step that will keep you out of the kingdom of God. Page 101. Milton H. Hadley works with the Durham Friends meeting at Freeport, Maine. His article, The Mockery of Beverage Alcohol, discusses the influence of beverage alcohol on a worker's performance. Please listen to his account of an experiment in the meatpacking industry in Chicago. It may be that the most significant and dangerous mockery in our machine age is the effect on the drinker's psychology. Just what this is was demonstrated in an experiment conducted in Chicago. After considering the selection of workers who might give an accurate check on the influence of beer, the experimenters decided to use a group of men who were packing dried beef in glass jars in one of the big packing houses. Each man's production was checked after 1 hour's work in the morning. Then all were offered glasses of beer. A number accepted with pleasure, as they were told that the effect of beer on manual skills was being studied. These workers wiped their mouths and stated their opinion that now they can really pack dried beef. At the close of another hour's work, the results were checked. Production had fallen off from 1/16th to 1/4th among the different workers. This was not surprising. But how did the workers accept the figures? They argued, they even swore, they had never packed as much of the stuff before in an hour. Some simply refused to accept the results of the test, insisting that they had been tricked. So at the same time that alcoholic beverage actually cuts down on a man's dexterity and manual skills, it gives him a false sense of unusual efficiency. Some alcohol enters the brain cells and seems to say, now you can really pack dried beef. Now you can operate this machine. Now you can really drive this car of yours. At the very time when skill is lessened, the sense of skill is increased. Is any mockery more serious today than such a false opinion of what one can do? Pages 170 and 171. A number of years ago, the brewing industry popularized the slogan, "Beer Belongs." C.M. Wallace wrote the following poem on that topic. "Beer belongs, the brewer tells us. Beer belongs? Yes, let us see. All that flaunted beer belongs to. Beer belongs to tragedy. Beer belongs to drunken driving. Beer belongs to highway wrecks. Bodies bruised and maimed and bleeding. Broken arms and broken necks. Beer belongs to family quarrels, hatred, infidelity. Beer belongs to childhood blighted, doomed to insecurity. Beer makes dad act queer and foolish. Beer makes mothers silly too. Children ask, why should folks drink? Beer belongs. That's why they do. Beer belongs to rape and murder, bestial crime of every sort. Beer belongs to jail and prison. Beer belongs to crowded courts. Beer belongs to cheapened morals, stolen virtue, low disease, heartaches, tears, sorrow, remorse. Beer belongs to all of these. Beer belongs to wealth-mad brewers, caring not for God nor man. Beer belongs to filthy taverns, breaking every legal ban. Beer belongs to gross corruption. Beer belongs to bribe and threat. Beer belongs to all that's sordid. Truly beer belongs. And yet, if our land to beer surrenders, nor forsakes the flowing bowl, nor condemns its power and ruin, human heart and mind and soul, never shall we come to greatness, ne'er our destiny fulfill. Beer destroys the greatest nation. Help us, Lord, to do thy will." If there has ever been a time when churches, all churches, not just churches of Christ, should speak out against the legalization and widespread use of beverage alcohol, that time is now. As a nation, we cannot afford to have more drinking, more killing, more unhappy wives and children, more broken hearts, homes, and lives. Do you honestly believe you can escape the judgment of God if you fail to speak out against this great evil? Please do your duty as preachers, church leaders, and professing Christians. How tragic if those who claim to be Christians do not use their influence to stop a drug which does so much harm to everyone. My friends, we thank you for listening. May our Heavenly Father continue to bless you.